For many of us, a funeral is just about the last place we'd want to be on any given day. But for funeral directors, being in the presence of the deceased is the most basic requirement of their job. So what's it like to have to conduct your business in such an emotionally fraught environment on a daily basis? To answer this question and many more, I'm delighted to be joined by three experienced undertakers. They are a director of Rom Massey and Sons Funeral Undertakers, Neil Massey, a funeral director with Kieran Brothers and Funeral Care PRO and Communications with the Irish Association of Funeral Directors, Colm Kieran also joins us, and managing director of Stafford's Funeral Homes, Jonathan Stafford, is with us as well. Lads, thanks for coming in. Lovely to see you all this morning, and been interested about this business. I'm going to start with you, Neil Massey, and maybe you might just tell us a little bit about your own business, the Masseys, the Staffords. You know, there are names that are associated with the Jennings, the Quinns. You're all related to one another, is that right?
The Masseys would be. The Staffords, I wouldn't say so.
Right.
But certainly there are family names that are synonymous with funeral directing in Dublin. Mine is one of them. I got into it kind of by accident almost. When I was younger, I had no plans of becoming a funeral director. But then just situations changed and I ended up becoming one.
Yeah.
And have stayed one since.
And just in terms of the evolution of your own business, in 1993, I think there might have been, again, like with many Irish families, we're great at having bust ups. Your father and your brother and yourself went into business as Rom Massey and Sons.
Yeah, yeah, we did, yeah.
Okay. And then just about that family link, the importance of your name, the importance of somebody who has a bereavement and wants to talk to Neil Massey. You know, people are they're very precise, I would expect, and they want to deal with people maybe that their father dealt with or that the family have dealt with before. It's very important, is it not?
Continuity can be very important because people, maybe they dealt with me 10, 15 years ago and they just remember my name, or they mightn't even remember my name, they might just recognise my face. They may have dealt with my father going back many years and want to have a sort of connection with that as well, as in one of his sons. Continuity is very important. Providing sort of a stable environment for people to come into, stable, welcoming environment, and letting people be at their ease when they're arranging a funeral can be quite important. They don't. It's a fraught enough time anyhow for families.
Okay.
What they don't want is us adding to their emotional state.
Yeah. So you really have to detach yourself from, like, it's a functional role in terms of getting things organised, making sure that everything runs smoothly, and really,
you have to be detached.
Yeah, and it's done quite silently, you know, and efficiently in the background.
Oh yeah, that, you know, we have to get everything done on time when it's supposed to be. We can't come back and say we messed up a funeral. We'll do it again tomorrow. We've got one chance to do it. So everything has to be right first time. But on the other hand, it's quite, it reaffirms my faith in humanity, the job, because people, when they come to us, 99.9% of the people who have died are missed and have been loved. So it's, you know, everybody, almost everyone who dies is missed by somebody, which means there's love present. And that's, and it's not reassuring for the family at the time, but from a funeral director's point of view, it just reaffirms your belief in humanity.
Okay, let me bring in Colm Kieran. Colm is a funeral director of Kieran Brothers up there in King's Court, is it? Yes?
That's correct.
I think I would suggest, and this is only my ignorance saying this, but I would suggest that there's a stark difference between the life of a country undertaker to the urban situation that we have also represented here this morning. Would that be correct to say?
Absolutely, Bobby. I remember sitting around some of the Dublin funeral directors at a course that I undertook a few years ago, and I remember hearing some of them discussing how some of them had the phone at the weekend, and that meant that, you know, that was their one out of four weekends that they were on call.
Right.
And I said, hold on a second here, lads, what does that mean? So to find out that I suppose the role of an urban funeral director involved a time in which their phone could be switched off or they weren't on call was a big realisation for myself.
One of the other big differences, Colm, is that a lot of rural undertakers will do undertaking almost part-time. They may be an auctioneer, a financial services consultant. You know, it'll be dovetailed with another probably service-related business.
Absolutely, and that all comes down to viability. It just wouldn't be viable in a lot of rural towns and villages to provide a full-time service of funeral directing. But yet, at the same time, I suppose part-time might sound as though we're not doing it so much, but the commitment is actually greater because you're all the time have to be available 24/7 to respond when necessary.
And could I also then maybe present maybe another one in that you know, while the lads here in Dublin may not know every customer that comes through their door, it's pretty likely that you'll know 90% of your customers.
That's 90% of our customers we would know personally. We're surrounded by them on a daily basis. I walk outside my shop premises off the other half of the business and I bump into that family maybe 2 days later, or I meet them somewhere down the town and I'm picking up milk or sugar or something like that. So yes, it would be some, but that's fraught with challenges, but also it's nice in some ways that people realise that you are around, you are based, and you're there to respond to them.
Okay, we're talking the business of funeral directors. If you've got any texts, get them into us. 53106 is our text number, and our experts here will help answer any queries that you may have. Let me bring in our third guest now. He's Jonathan Stafford from Stafford's Funeral Home. Jonathan, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much, Bobby.
Just again, the changing face, Jonathan, of the Irish funeral. Can I just ask you about maybe some things that are happening now? Has the removal on the night before, has that gone completely, or is it in the process of almost being gone?
Yeah, it's nearly gone. But a lot of families still like the choice of having removal the night before, but you're right. I mean, it's probably gone from 100% removals when we started 20-odd years ago to, you know, probably 10%, 20%, depends on the family. I would see a lot more people going for a much more personal choice. Years ago, as my father, I used to watch him arranging a funeral in the day, and he literally would guide the family, tell them that when they were going, what they were going to do, what type of coffin. Maybe they'd get a selection of 3 or 4 coffins, and then, you know, whether it was a habit the family wanted to use the person's own clothes.
Right.
Now the family sort of tell us what they want. You know, we obviously try and guide them what time, and, you know, there's a much bigger selection of coffins. Obviously, cremation is much more popular again than 20-odd years ago.
I was surprised to see that 50% of funerals now approximately are cremations.
That would be particularly with Stafford's, that wouldn't be in rural areas at all, you know, and then depending on different demographics in different areas of the city, it wouldn't be 50% at all. So, that would be Stafford's business.
And is it heading that way, that cremation is going to become more and more popular?
In urban areas, yes. It just wouldn't suit, like, we were talking earlier on, it wouldn't suit an awful lot of rural families to go to a crematorium that's, 100 miles away, where in the local grave is, you know, €400 or whatever. But that's, again, some people insist on it because of the whole idea that you have to, you know, they don't want to look after the grave afterwards. And then again, there's a, you know, religious background to it as well, you know.
And the fact that we're no longer as Catholic as we may have once been, that's obviously at play as well, is it not? The humanist funerals and this kind of stuff.
Well, we see it particularly in some parts of our business that, you know, a huge amount of people, compared to, again, 20 years ago, have moved away from the church and the religious background, and they like the idea again that it's a personalised service, a celebration of life, and, you know, we use civil celebrants then to do that. So, you know, they'll integrate little bits and pieces of the deceased life into a lovely service, which you can obviously do in a religious service, but it just, again, people have their own ideas about these things. So, you know, we're literally providing a service, and we'll do whatever we're asked to do.
Just on that point, Neil Massey, in terms of, I suppose, the less prominence of the Catholic funeral, where 95% of funerals would have been Catholic, can there be friction with the church around things like music and protocol if you're using the church and it is a Catholic funeral?
Yeah, there always has been that part of it, because people wouldn't be as regular mass goers as they used to be. So now, what's happened over the last 10 years or more, people will come in with their own ideas about what kind of music they want, whereas the church guidelines are that it's only church music in a church, liturgical music. So there can be a bit of friction that way, but usually they can get something not religious at the end as the coffin is leaving the church.
And is part of your role as the funeral director, I suppose, to negotiate all that? In other words, to keep the family out of any kind of...
Generally, what I would do is, if a family are having a Catholic service, when I'm arranging the funeral with them, I will mention to them, look, you know, you've got to run any music choices by the church and make sure and tell them that they are really limited to church music in the church. right. except at the end. And most people are fine with that. And if they really have a problem with it, well, then I suggest maybe they have something at the graveside or in the crematorium.
Yeah.
The crematorium chapel, they can have usually a couple of pieces of music and they can have whatever they want there. So that usually smooths the waters.
Okay. Colm Kearn, I'm interested in your business. And, you know, you say you assess the viability of the business on a regular basis. And, you know, you explained earlier to us there that it works well in tandem with another business. But do you, in order to get business from a particular town, for instance, do you have to have a presence in that town? Do you have to have a funeral home in King's Court or in Cross McGlen or wherever it is to get business there? Is that a...
Absolutely. It would be an investment that we made almost 5 years ago now, where we put changed a premises that was belonging to our own into a funeral home. Quite considerable investment involved. But what it did, it created a place in people's minds that was associated with the business. So it wasn't just, well, there's the company there that has the hearse and the black suit. It was, here's a professional company that have a premises that's associated with the business that are going to be here as well. It establishes you that you're there for the long term.
So in terms of growing the business then, like if you want to grow, you know, it physically involves opening up another premises, does it?
I suppose if you want to grow your funeral directing business, it would involve, in a rural area, it would probably involve moving to adjacent towns or trying to set up in a larger town. I suppose that's the challenge for funeral directors in rural communities, is to see where does the growth come from. Or are they happy with the complementary businesses that they have? So take for us, for example, we've looked at it slightly different, where we've actually gone to the funeral directors market and seen what products can we offer funeral directors.
And you provide a traffic management equipment for funeral homes. Explain that to me.
Well, my background, I was trained as an engineer, but I then worked as a business development manager for a traffic management company called CHM. And you'll see all their equipment around the city at the minute. They provide the Lewis Crossing traffic works. And through that industry, I would have been exposed to signage and equipment that's used for that purpose. When I returned to the family business, I saw that there was a gap there for funeral directors, particularly rural ones, to warn and inform people of wake houses. So chances are, if you're travelling to a wake in Ireland today and you come across a sign that directs you or warns you of a wake on the road, it's probably one of our signs that's done that.
And is just on wakes, how popular are they now? Or is it thing of people, you know, drinking whiskey for 3 days?
No, if you go back to my dad's invoice books 50 years ago, you will see kegs of Guinness and beer and so on. But that day is absolutely gone. But the Irish wake is still alive and strong. The difference that we see is that people are a lot more restrictive as to when houses are open. So John was just saying that, you know, people are now much more, demanding is the wrong word, but, you know, they recognise that they're in a wake situation, that there's no need to have the house open from when somebody passes away right through to when the funeral is, that they're set in times when the house is going to be open.
Jonathan Stafford, I'd like to bring you in on that. Is a wake, do you see any of them in Dublin?
Oh yeah, absolutely, yeah. God. Particularly in the last, it's very cyclical over the last 20 years. They come in come and go as people, you know, the popularity of it. And again, that going back to the, you know, the family's choice, I totally agree with Colm. You see this idea that a family will have a reposing in the house between sort of 4 and 7 or 5 and 8, and again, it restricts the amount of people then that sort of come in and are talking to the family when family sort of want their own time. They'll need their own individual time, and they have the family time together with the remains, you know.
Okay. You say as well, do you not, Jonathan, that the funeral is for the living, not for the dead?
Well, it's a huge part of that. I mean, that's particularly in the last number of years, again, that whole idea that it's very important that people get to grieve and celebrate life and obviously grieve. But yeah, that'd be a huge part of, you know, what I certainly see that a lot more, that people, you know, it's very, very important that people get to do these things that they want, you know, that they want to do. Now, a lot of the times the deceased will leave, you know, his request or her request and say, look, this is what I want to do. But the family will integrate their own ideas into it.
Yeah, yeah. What about the skill set that's required to deal with distressful grieving situations, Neil? Is there specific training that you receive, or is that just something that you you get good at because it's the job.
Well, there are training courses now run by the Irish Association of Funeral Directors to sort of train funeral directors. But when I started, it was a case of learning the job. But it was sort of instilled in you to sort of listen to people and be empathetic and to try and sort of put yourself in their shoes as if, you know, what would you want if, or what would I want if someone belonging to me had passed away? What kind of service would I want? You wouldn't want someone coming in and telling you what you can do or what you can't do. You'd want someone to listen and take on board what you're saying and fit it into what is possible and what isn't possible.
Yeah.
So yeah, a lot of it's just empathy and just putting yourself in the other person's shoes.
Last word to you, Colm Kieran, on that thing about grieving. And, you know, is it about kind of respect that somebody, you know, that you're very mindful of just the sensitivity of how you deal with people, how you look is important, how you communicate, your language. Just talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I suppose that's what you might call as the first call. And when you meet a family in a distress situation, how you manage yourself, manage the environment around them can be very important. Sometimes we would arrive to a house and maybe somebody has passed away suddenly and the house is full of people. There's a lot of noise, there's a lot of families coming and going, a lot of phone calls being made.
Yeah.
That type of situation is very important to take the person who you're actually dealing with out of that environment, get them sat down, get them calmed down and speak to them what the next steps are. Because the most common thing that we hear from families is, what do we do next?
Yeah.
And that's not for them to know, that's for us to know.
That's great. Okay, listen, thanks for letting us into your world. It's a world that many don't understand. It's one that we all have to deal with at some stage. Yes, you
just
want to say something else?
Just in terms of our association funeral directors and the change in needs of people as they manage funerals, we'll be going out for a public consultation this year, and we just ask people to keep an eye out for that.
Okay.
In terms of services that people would like to see change and adapt as the years go on.
Okay, a big thanks to my guests, Neil Massey from Ron Massey & Co, Jonathan Stafford from Stafford's Funeral Homes, and Colm Kieran from Kieran Brothers Funeral Care. Thank you all very much for joining us.